Chapter 26. Lucius was at the edge of the shaft in a heartbeat, but the golden-winged eagle was already too far away for his whip. He pulled his bolt pistol and drew a bead on its golden form. Almost immediately, the bird began jinking and weaving through the air as though it somehow sensed it was being targeted. Lucius fired, but his shot went wide. Two more shots missed before a fourth finally clipped the edge of the bird's wing. "Got you," he said triumphantly, watching as it spiraled downwards. Falk felt the paralyzing lethargy that had held him rooted to the spot fall away, and immediately moved in Perturabo's direction. The Iron Hands were here, and they were advancing behind a screen of fire towards the Primarchs. Their presence here amazed him. How had they come through the labyrinth? Had they found a secret way into the sepulchre that Karuchi Vora had not known existed? Amid the charging Iron Hands, Falk saw a half-glimpsed shape at the edge of the chamber, a slight figure in a long black robe, and his pace faltered as he recognized Karuchi Vora. At first he assumed he was mistaken, but then he saw the figure again, and this time there was no mistaking the thin features. The Eldar Perturabo had killed in the labyrinth. Could he have a brother? It was surely the only explanation, but as he looked closer, he saw that the resemblance was more than just fraternal. The Eldar with the Iron Hands was identical in every way to Karuchi Vora. Falk threw off his shock and forced himself to concentrate on the important matters at hand. He had no understanding of the subtleties of this situation, only that the Lord of Iron needed at least one of his triarchs at his side. "To the Primarch!" he yelled, leading the Iron Warriors in defence of their liege lord. The Emperor's children were mirroring his actions, rallying to Fulgrim's side as coruscating loops of purple and gold lightning flailed from his body, as though he had become a vast, overloading generator. An Emperor's children warrior with blades sheathed in the bare flesh of his chest came at him, swinging a giant tooth-bladed chain axe. His helm was an older mark, making him look like one of the techno-barbarians of the Unification Wars. Falk angled his shoulder guard to take the blow, and the screaming teeth bit only a finger breadth before sliding clear. "Fool!" cried Falk. "We have a common enemy!" The barbarian paid his words no heed and raised his axe for another strike. Falk punched clean through the warrior's chest, the power fist obliterating his entire torso and leaving only a gory heap of dismembered body parts in its wake. He stamped the warrior's helm flat as he continued, his combi bolters blasting out the last of his twin magazines. Two black-clad warriors fell into the shaft, the bolter fire blowing them apart from the inside. Gunfire roared all around as the Iron Warriors came with him, a hammer of righteous fury. Like Falk, they didn't know what Fulgrim and his debauchers were doing to Perturabo, but that it was harmful was obvious. Berossus crashed into the Phoenix Guard, forming a cordon around them, and three of Fulgrim's elite Praetorians were smashed to bloody ruin in as many blows. The rest were not so easily felled, fighting with powered halberds that carved great chunks from Berossus's armour. The struggle became a close-range firefight, the fighting warriors blasting at one another with pistols and clubbing with fists and feet. "Fight the Iron Hands!" yelled Falk, but his words were falling on deaf ears. He pulled up short as the skull face that had haunted him from the warp took shape in the blood spatter patterns on a smashed storm shield. "Speak with my voice, the glossy-aic unspeech." Falk's anger brimmed over. Anger at the Iron Hands, at the Emperor's children, but most of all at the sheer stupidity of disunity. This fight needed a warrior who could take charge, a warrior whose words would be obeyed. "Fight the Iron Hands!" he yelled, and those warriors nearest him recoiled at the force of his words, seals popping on their gorgets and paint blistering on their armour. Those without helms staggered as their gag reflex brought up the oily, acidic contents of their stomachs. For a fraction of the smallest moment, they stared at him in awe and fear. And then they obeyed. Kroger put aside his heedless smashing of the motionless Eldar constructs at the sight of the Iron Hands, feeling the red fog in his mind disperse enough for him to see that a greater enemy had presented itself. He stood atop a heap of shattered glass and broken Eldar remains. He could remember nothing of the slaughters that had seen them destroyed, and that complete loss of control shocked him. The Iron Warriors were hard fighters, but they were no screaming berserkers. Not for them the unshackled fury of Angron's world-eaters. That way lay madness, and Kroger would not surrender to such an irreversible course. He still felt the lure of complete surrender, but clamped down on it with a whispered recitation of the unbreakable litany. From iron cometh strength, from strength cometh will cometh faith, from faith cometh honour, from honour cometh iron, he said, and may it ever be so. He took deep breaths, feeling the bonds of control clamping down on his beating aggression. It still lurked in the heart of him, but it was his to command, his to release, or his to ignore. For now. Kroger began running to where Barban Falk led a cadre of Iron Warriors and Emperor's children against the Iron Hands. Marius Verosian ripped his hand across the firing frets of his sonic cannon, playing the shrieking harmonics over the Iron Hands. They were advancing in the cover of the towers, but his weapon blazed through them with caroming detonations. One warrior was torn apart, the force of the impact vibrations ripping both his arms from their sockets and pulping his head like an eggshell. Another's armour went into resonant frequency shock and reduced his flesh and bone to liquid paste. He laughed to see such death, hammering his hand down again and again, sending out ripping chords of dissonant frequency blasts. Everywhere he aimed, the ground erupted in fissuring gouges. Enemy warriors were flung away by the screaming power. He and the few cacophoni still alive paid no heed to the Iron Warrior with the booming voice, though the piercing violence of it had pleased Marius greatly. More focused than Eidolon's sonic shriek, but less painful and therefore less stimulating. Though his senses had been heightened in almost every way by the ministrations of Fabius, Marius had lost none of his tactical acumen, and saw that the Iron Hands had the best of this conflict so far. They were fresh into the battle, whereas the Iron Warriors and Emperor's children had already fought a deadly enemy, and their ammunition stocks were depleted, their numbers diminished, and their Primarchs unable to fight. The black-armoured warriors were fighting in smaller kill teams, moving implacably forwards under the withering fire from a braying dreadnought. Its bolter and flamer bathed the chamber in strobing muzzle flare and whooshing gouts of promethium. It advanced over a flaming avenue of broken Eldar bodies, unstoppable and immense. Marius looked for the Iron Warrior's dreadnought and grinned lopsidedly as he saw it fighting through the towers to reach its enemy twin. A group of Iron Hands broke from cover, a leader and a combat cell with a bulky cannon weapon, and Marius stepped out into the open with his three cacophoni. He played a shrieking burst of sound waves and blistering powered chords. Three of the warriors went down, scattered, but not dead. A fourth rolled to his feet and aimed a long, custom-designed carbine at Marius. The shot punched through the weapon Marius had fashioned from the instruments designed by Bekwa Kinska for her Maravigilia, and a wailing explosion of clashing harmonics exploded outwards, the death scream of a living being. He hurled the dying device aside as the looming form of the Iron Hand's dreadnought hove into view. A hurricane of shells slammed into him, punching him from his feet and ripping through his cacophony. They died screaming, revelling in the sounds of their own death. Blood pooled in Marius's armour, but he welcomed the sensation. It had been too long since he had felt real pain, and orgasmic synaptic connections exploded in his cortex, stimulating him beyond all reason. He surged to his feet, the muscles and bones in his jaw distending and reshaping in readiness. The warrior with the carbine flicked a selector switch on the weapon's stock, but before he could fire, Marius drew breath and unleashed a shrieking blast of sound from his swelling lungs and altered trachea. The warrior, an iron father, he now saw, fell back, clutching his helmet as the deafening, ear-bursting volume of Marius's shout overloaded his battle armor's auto-senses before they could protect him. Even the dreadnought rocked back under the sonic force, its aural receptors exploding in a shower of cascading sparks. That would disorientate it long enough for Marius to finish the legionaries under its protection and move on. Marius's face moved with grotesque, fleshy undulations, drawing a huge amount of air into his lungs for another sonic exhalation. One of the warriors climbed to his feet, his armour torn and scorched, almost bare of paint. Reeling, the warrior staggered under the weight of a heavy Volkite cannon. He struggled with the unfamiliar weapon, hauling on arming levers and charging cranks. The gun's tip crackled with building energy, but such a powerful weapon took time to fire. Time this warrior didn't have. Marius spread his arms and leaned into his screaming bellow. The air between the two warriors fractured with sonic detonations, a jagged haze of noise that filled the chamber and shattered hundreds of spirit stones floating above the battle. Marius screamed until his lungs were emptied, the cathartic sound of madness setting his brain afire with blistering sensations of pleasure, pain, and ecstatic joy. Incredibly, impossibly, the warrior remained standing.
"What?" said Ignatius Newman grimly. "I didn't catch that."
Marius ballooned his lungs for another shriek of power. Deaf to all sound, the Morlock triggered the Volkite cannon. The searing ray punched through Marius Verosian's breastplate and explosively boiled his flesh and blood in the blink of an eye. He didn't even have breath to scream. Picking his way between the knots of fighting legionaries, Lucius spied the struggling form of the golden bird. It lay in a pile of broken crystal 20 meters away, its wing shattered and one leg bent back at an unnatural angle. The black and gold gemstone Fulgrim coveted lay beside its crumpled beak, and Lucius took a moment to wonder whether such automata could feel pain. A scuffle of boots on loose stone and crystal sounded behind him, careless and club-footed. Lonomia Ruin dropped into the cover of a collapsed pillar with him, a dripping dagger held in one hand, a needle pistol in the other.
"What is that stone?" asked Ruin.
Lucius didn't bother to hide his irritation at Ruin's presence and ignored the question. He didn't know what was so important about it, but that Fulgrim desired it was enough for him. A darting shape moved through the shadows before him, and Lucius squinted through the misty haze of green fog and gun smoke. Something was out there, but he couldn't see it properly. Even his gen-hanced acuity, further sharpened by the spatial rewiring of the sensory centres of his brain, couldn't pick out what it was. It was a shadow, where no shadows should be. A ghost out of place, on a world of ghosts. Lucius smiled as comprehension dawned. "Ruin," he said, nodding in the direction of the downed eagle. "You see that?"
"What?"
said Ruin, scrambling to the edge of the pillar and peering round its broken stub.
"There," said Lucius. "Quickly."
"I don't see anything,"
said Ruin, before a tiny thip-thip sounded and the back of his helmet blew out. He slumped over onto his side, both eye lenses shattered and scorched. "Idiot," said Lucius, swinging his bolter up over the pillar and aiming at the point where he'd seen the tiny telltale flash of the needler. Most observers wouldn't have seen the weapon's las flare concealed within a shadow and shrouded by fallen debris. But Lucius wasn't most observers.
The Raven Guard would already be displacing, but Lucius could give him something to force his head down. Bolt shells stitched a percussive path through the shadow. He kept firing as he vaulted the fallen pillar and ran towards the fallen eagle. Solid needle rounds puffed the ground behind him in a blitzing series of innocuous-sounding impacts. Lucius dived over the fallen remains of an Eldar construct and scooped up the golden-black gemstone. It was heavier than it looked, the weight in his palm considerable, and the heat that it exuded made it feel like it had been left in an oven overnight. That heat flowed through him, and the feeling of immortal vitality that saturated his flesh was so intense that he almost cried out. "No wonder Fulgrim wants this," he said, holstering his pistol and drawing his sword. As soon as the blade was in his hand, a black shape streaked from the shadow of a nearby tower on a near-silent plume of whooshing jet flame. Shots hammered Lucius's chest, but failed to penetrate. He dived to the side and brought his blade up in a slashing motion that sheared the barrel from the weapon in a cracking shower of non-reflective ceramite. The Raven Guard twisted in mid-air, dropping lightly to his feet and throwing aside the ruined halves of his weapon. "You bring a needle carbine to a sword fight," sneered Lucius. Once again his opponent triggered his jump pack, shooting forwards to deliver a thunderous kick to the centre of Lucius's breastplate. Lucius was hurled back, hearing the crack of splitting plasteel. The Raven Guard sprang at him with his twin black swords extended before him. Lucius rolled aside and sprang to his feet in time to block a downward cut and scissored his body to avoid a disemboweling slash to the gut. His own sword lanced down to the Raven Guard's neck, but a burst of thrust carried the warrior away again. Lucius unhooked the whip he'd taken from dead Kalimos, letting the barb length of it uncoil like a hungry snake. "Just me and thee now," said Lucius, removing his helmet and tossing it aside. He reached up to a raised weal on his cheek, a scar that should have long since healed, but which had been kept raw and marked with caustic powders. "You cut me before, and I will always treasure that wound. But that's all you're getting, Raven Guard."
"Sharrowkin," said the warrior.
"What?"
"My name," said the Raven Guard. "It's Nykona Sharrowkin, just so you know who it is that's killed you."
"Nykona Sharrowkin," said Lucius, rolling the name around in his mouth as though experiencing a new flavour. "No, that's not the name of a man that can kill me."
"You don't get to decide," said Sharrowkin,
one sword held high over his head, the other extended low. They circled one another warily, each aware of the other's skill and knowing they were well matched. Neither paid heed to the battles raging around them, the life and death struggles being played out in the ruins of a dying race's tomb. All that mattered was the purity of the duel. All other pretenders to this fight were dead, and all that remained to be decided was which of them would walk away. Lucius attacked first, lashing his whip at Sharrowkin's head. The barbed tip scored a line through the faceplate and left eye lens. Lucius followed up with a low cut to the thigh, redirected at the last instant for the groin. Sharrowkin read the move and blocked with crossed blades, spinning on his heel to hammer his elbow into Lucius's head. But Lucius wasn't there, rolling forwards beneath the blow to thrust his blade at the base of Sharrowkin's spine. More flame from the Raven Guard's jump pack carried him away from the paralysing strike, and he spun as he landed to face Lucius once more. "You're fast, son of Korax," said Lucius.
"Too fast for you, traitor."
Lucius smiled.
"You won't goad me into foolishness."
Even before Lucius finished speaking, Sharrowkin gunned his jets again. Instead of dodging, Lucius leapt to meet the Raven Guard, his whip slashing and his sword stabbing. The lash cracked around Sharrowkin's neck, constricting and drawing blood before releasing.
Lucius rammed his sword up, but Sharakin's blade turned it aside at the last second, its edge scraping a finger-deep furrow in the ceramite. They landed badly, the stuttering jets of Sharakin's jump pack skidding them along the ground towards the edge of the shaft. All skill was irrelevant, only brute ferocity as the two swordsmen grappled and kicked at one another. Too close for sword work, Sharakin rammed his helmeted head into Lucius's unprotected face. Blood burst from his broken nose, and his cheekbone shattered under the force of the impact. Lucius blinked away bloody tears and pushed himself away from Sharakin. He saw the black outline of the Raven Guard coming at him and stabbed his sword into where Sharakin's throat would be. His blade struck only empty air, and the shock of that almost cost him his life. Somehow, impossibly, the Raven Guard wasn't there. A blade plunged into his side, and Lucius twisted away from the fiery, unexpected, and exquisite pain. He shook his eyes clear of blood and felt the Raven Guard behind him. He spun and thrust low with his sword, but once again his blades cut air and not flesh. Another lancing blow plunged into his back, and this time the pain was an unwelcome sensation. Lucius could see the Raven Guard, but he moved like nothing he had ever seen before, faster than any mortal man could possibly move, like a wraith or a being out of step with time. A black blade licked out and laid his cheek bare to the bone, a matching wound to the one Sharakin had given him the last time their blades had crossed. Lucius spun, feeling suddenly helpless as the Raven Guard slipped around him with dizzying speed, his blade stabbing again and again. Lucius felt his sword tumble from his hand, the whip wrapping itself around his wrist as though unwilling to be parted from him, even in death. Then the Raven Guard was at Lucius's back, pushing him to his knees, blades pressed down through his gorget into the hollows either side of his neck.
"It gives me no pleasure to do this," said Sharakin. "You are nothing to me, simply a rabid dog that needs to be put down."
Lucius tried to speak, to say something to mark his death. Sharakin's blades stabbed down behind Lucius's collarbone, tearing through his hearts and lungs, severing arteries and wreaking catastrophic damage that not even a space marine's post-human physiology could undo. And all thoughts of a worthy valediction died with him. Brother Bombastus had a fist that could crush cataphracty armour, tear open the hulls of bane blades, and rend the steel of hive towers. His flamer burned the Emperor's children, melting their warplate and roasting them within their ceramite armour. On any civilised world of the Imperium, Bombastus would have been labelled a psychopath, a dangerously unstable individual who would most likely have ended up in an execution cell after who knew how many brutal murders. Yet those very tendencies that marked him out as dangerously aberrant in human society rendered him perfect clay from which to mould a space marine. Decades of conditioning, training, discipline and brotherhood had wrought as honourable and devoted an iron hand as could be expected. But that had all come to an end at the hands of a hybrid alien creature on the inverted deck of a crippled Diasporex vessel as it plunged down into the Carolus star. Isolated from the fraternity of his brothers, the psychopathic tendencies that had attracted the attention of the Iron Hand's recruiters crept back in like squatters into the mind of Brother Bombastus. He relished battle. He endured the long sleeps between war and bloodshed and was first to wake when the machines were empowered and the words of activation spoken. The combat on the Sisypheum had been fierce but short, and fought against monsters. This fight against fellow legionaries was exactly the kind of fight he craved. Not for Bombastus, the horror and tragedy of fighting his once brothers. He welcomed it. They came at him again and again, insects against a titan. Only the warrior Newman had killed with his Volkite cannon had come close to doing any real damage.
Without his external oral pickups, he fought in silence, which was proving to be more of an inconvenience than he'd expected. The screams of the dying were as much part of the experience of killing as seeing it happen. Then, from behind one of the strange, gem-studded towers, he saw something that sent a jolt of electrical excitement around his iron body. A dreadnought, one marked with rank bars, his internal database identified as a warsmith, no less. Bombastus strode through the mass of fighting, ignoring everything else in his path as he fought to reach the one opponent that might challenge him. The heavier machine moved with a ponderous grace, its waist gimbal moving in dimensions his could not. Its hammer arm was crackling and lethal, but its main gun was silent.
"No ammunition!" roared Bombastus, though the words were only rendered as text on the inner face of his casket visor. He could no longer hear the bellowed challenge.
The dreadnought turned to face him, and Bombastus read the flurry of activations throughout its armoured shell. Automated weapon loaders sought and failed to find ammunition in the rear-mounted hoppers. Bombastus sprayed the Warsmith dreadnought with a wash of blazing promethium, dousing its carapace from head to foot. He knew the damage would be minimal, but humiliation was the first part of any killing. He loosed an impudent blast of bolter fire across its carapace. Most of the rounds ricocheted, but one lucky shell caromed from the upper edge of its carapace and blasted a chunk of armour plating free. Sparks flared from a tantalizing tear in its upper surfaces, a wound to be torn wider. Then the time for guns was over, and the two dreadnoughts slammed together with a noise like starships colliding. A fight between dreadnoughts was not a subtle affair of feints, counters, and riposts. It was a brutal, tearing, barging grapple, where the victor was the war machine that offered the fewest openings to its foe. The Iron Warrior's dreadnought was the heavier machine, but Bombastus quickly realized that he had the edge in experience. Whoever had been interred in this burnished sarcophagus was a recent implantee. His skill and knowledge of the weapons, balance, and moves available to him limited by his lack of experience. A thunderous uppercut paralyzed his enemy's cannon arm, tearing out the vulnerable servos beneath the curve of its shoulder guards. A body blow rocked Bombastus, but he rode the force of it, spinning around and stepping in to deliver a punishing ram. A hammer blow pummeled his upper carapace, and a dozen damage indicators flared to life on his casket visor.
"Your height and weight advantage," he bellowed. "I will not forget that again."
Bombastus pushed hard, slamming his fist down on the dreadnought's frontal section and driving it back. Momentum was the key, pounding blows raining down one after another. Bombastus caught a flicker of motion to his side, but ignored it as his Auspex registered a lone legionary. An iron warrior, but one without any discernible weapons, capable of causing damage. Once again he pummeled the dreadnought, breaking its armour open and exposing areas a dreadnought ought never to expose. Pinkish fluids and steaming oil poured from his foe's carapace, its machine lifeblood. A sudden threat indicator spiked at Bombastus's rear as his Auspex detected a thermal bloom from a damage-capable weapon. The dreadnought was still reeling, no threat for now, so Bombastus spun round his central axis, feeding shells into the breech of his bolter. Overkill for a single warrior, but immensely satisfying. The melter blast took Bombastus in the centre of his casket, instantly vaporising the ablative layers of ceramite and melting through the inches of armour protecting the fleshy remains that empowered his battlefield divinity. Bombastus' mind screamed within his fluid-filled sarcophagus as life-preserving gels boiled and delicate biosynaptic receptors were flash-burned in an instant. His motors spasmed in response to his agonies and his body tilted on its axis as he spun back round. The Iron Warrior's dreadnought's hammer piston directly into the ruin of his casket, crushing the last remains of Bombastus to a pink mulch smeared on the inner face of an empty shell.
He did not fall. His body was too immense and too heavy simply to topple over. Instead, he sagged, with his arms limp at his side, stinking biofluids pouring from his ruptured sarcophagus.
"Gratitude,"
said Barossus, his augmitters crackling and gapped with interference.
"I am your loyal bondsman," said Cadarus Grendel, turning the melter gun over in his hands with a newfound admiration.
The noose of battle was closing on the two Primarchs at its centre. Perturabo locked on his knees, and Fulgrim hovering in the air, as though bound to his brother by ties not even the call of war could break. Sharrukin kicked the swordsman's body from his blades and swept up the stone the dead warrior had been so desperate to recover. Its substance was a shifting thing, blackened gold threads intertwined, swirling around in a complex pattern like an eternally deadlocked yin and yang. Sharrukin had no idea what the gemstone might be. All that mattered was that Fulgrim desired it and must therefore be denied it. Hideous as it might be to contemplate, it seemed his purpose and that of Perturabo were aligned. The Iron Hands were mired in battle with the Emperor's children and Iron Warriors, zipping streams of fire blasting back and forth between them. Sharrukin saw Bombastus die as Vermanus Cybus and his Morlocks fought against a group of Phoenix Guard. Sabic Wayland coordinated the fire of supporting warriors, and Cadmus Tyro circled around the shaft to come up on the flanks of the Iron Warriors. He read the ebb and flow of the battle, and knew the Iron Hands could do without him for now. He placed the gemstone on a flat piece of debris and pulled the bolt pistol from the holster at the swordsman's hip. The grip was oddly textured, with an unpleasantly organic feel, and Sharrukin quickly checked for a round in the chamber. The sooner he could throw this weapon away, the better. He aimed the muzzle at the golden black stone. Sharrukin pulled the trigger, and the Morgatar stone exploded. Perturabo felt the sudden release of power, like a drowning man breaking the ocean's surface just as his lungs were fit to burst. A torrent of iron-edged energy coursed through him. A seismic shockwave of his incredible power returned to him in a flash flood of rebirth. He roared in the pain of it, for no rebirth was ever painless. Golden light haloed him, his eyes afire with it, and his veins burning with the molten fury of a Primarch's very essence. Such raw potency was never meant for such instantaneous transference, and his back arched as his weakened frame flexed to accommodate the sudden, shocking influx of power. Fulgrim's body arched in sympathetic resonance, for the Morgatar stone contained more than just the strength stolen from Perturabo. It contained their mingled essences, a power greater than the sum of its parts, a power to fuel an ascent so brutal that only the combined life force of two Primarchs could achieve it. Armor burned from Fulgrim's body, flaking away like golden dust in a hurricane, leaving his monstrously swollen body naked and his flesh blazing with furnace heat. Spectral flames of shimmering pink and purple licked around his body, a hungry fire waiting to consume him the moment his focus slipped. Perturabo slumped forwards onto his knuckles, holding himself erect with the iron in his soul and little else. Even as his strength returned, he felt the weight of it settle in his bones, like a burden he hadn't realized was his to shoulder. He pushed himself upright, his mastery of the power flooding his body growing with every second. His muscles surged with blood and golden energy, his heart beating with the strength of a forge hammer. For the first time in what seemed like a lifetime, Perturabo felt as he had when he had first laid eyes on the Emperor. All-powerful and all-knowing, privileged to know who he was. Much had changed since that moment, but enough remained the same for him to relish the sense of rightness as he lifted Forgebreaker onto his shoulder. He flexed his fingers and took a moment to admire the craftsmanship. Horus had given him this weapon as a symbol of their unity, but had he ever expected Perturabo would use it to kill one of his brothers? Fulgrim saw his death in Perturabo's eyes and grinned, silver light spilling from his gullet as he said, "You know, you have to do it."
"It didn't have to end this way," said Perturabo.
"You know it did," said Fulgrim. "So make it quick." Perturabo nodded and hefted Forgebreaker like a headsman at an execution. The steel and gold head of the hammer's killing face swung in a geometrically perfect arc, splitting the Phoenician's body wide open. And it was done.